The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside Studio West. Protests continue to roil across Israel and France all night long, and this morning, as Israel considers Prime Minister Netanyahu and his coalition are gathering to consider whether or not to pause the legislation, which has now reached the floor of the plenum session. The Knesset can pass it, I believe, with one reading. They've done all the amendments. They worked all weekend. They're right up on the brink of winning. But hundreds of thousands of Israelis don't like it. Same people that voted against Netanyahu and the coalition, you know, a few months ago don't like it. So they're out in the streets. They've closed Ben Gurion Airport this morning. Haifa port is closed. In France, protesters who lost the election to Macron are now being joined by black-clad anarchists and are burning down buildings in various parts. CNN has put out a story this morning. Is it safe to travel to France? The answer is, yeah, but know what you're doing. There's going to be garbage on the streets. So both countries have to decide whether or not their leaders who recently won blink. And I just remember when Prime Minister Liz Truss, she's now former Prime Minister Liz Truss, blinked when she won the election over Rishi Sunak to replace Boris Johnson in Great Britain last year. She put out a budget. The left wing exploded. They panicked financial elites. And she blinked and her government fell. And I think you have to consider that Netanyahu and Macron both look at what happened to Truss. Indeed, they have to look a little bit at what happened to Donald Trump in 2017 when traps were laid for him by the outgoing Obama administration. And they have to consider, do I blink now? If I blink, will it all fall apart? Netanyahu is a pretty shrewd character. His defense minister quit over the weekend. Netanyahu fired him, actually, because he wanted a pause in the judicial overhaul. Again, they have a very left-wing judiciary that is self-perpetuating. That's the problem. The right wing, led by Likud and Netanyahu, ran on that issue. That's what the election was about, and they won. So the hardest, farthest right part of the coalition has to decide whether or not they'll bring the coalition down if Netanyahu blinks. And Netanyahu has to decide whether or not the best thing to do is to get it done, and then we have 3.5 years under the new system, and we'll see. But, you know, the Supreme Court in Israel is sufficiently nutty that they might strike down the law that is intended to overhaul their selection and make them less elite. We don't know. We'll follow it. Other news overnight, First Citizens Bank, one of the country's largest regional banks, acquired a lot of what was left of SVB. They bought pieces of the Silicon Valley Bank that crashed 2 weeks ago. That will make markets happy this morning. As I said, we got a couple other headlines. I'm going to play a lot of what the former president had to say because I've only seen little clips, and he spoke for an hour and a half. So I can't play an hour and a half speech, but I can play a lot of it so you get a sense of what's going on. Reported this morning in the Wall Street Journal that the Trump grand jury in Manhattan is reconvening today and weighing whether Trump should be indicted. The former president rally was described as defiant, and Dan Balls wrote a piece for the Washington Post yesterday, indictment or not, Trump's strategy is the same, attack and threaten. And the Wall Street Journal says this morning, Trump's legal strategy, vilify prosecutors, stall probes, rally GOP base. Well, that is a high-risk strategy, but Donald Trump is a high-risk candidate. At dinner yesterday with old friends, Toby and Bob, and they will not ever vote for Trump again. So you've got never Trumpers and always Trumpers. And I don't think they even voted for Trump the first time, but they are Republicans. They like Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo and other people, but they really get upset about Trump. And they're very smart. They're very successful, very representative of swing voters. Used to be Democrats. Now they're Republicans, but they don't like Trump. But Trump is rallying the base. And Bob and I were having a conversation about whether or not Trump's base is 30% of the country or 30% of the Republican Party. I've got to do some deep dives on that. I'm going to ask Jake Sherman and Josh Krasauer that next hour. Interesting article over the weekend, a devastating impact. Silicon Valley Bank's collapse leaves startups with a funding hole. Lots of deals went south when SVB did. Lots of deals. Twitter being sabotaged from within. Part of their source code leaked over the weekend. There's a big offensive taking place in Ukraine. Wall Street Journal chronicled it this weekend. Weapons and training from NATO allies will be pivotal, while targeting will seek Russian weak spots. They are hoping for another blitzkrieg like they had last year. The Russian offensive is stalled. But we're talking about this as we're about World War I, because it is that kind of a war. And so the great German offensive would be followed by the great British and French offensive, and then a German offensive. Then the Americans got into the war in April 1917, and it was over in 18 months, because you just, men and materiel flowed in from America into the trenches. The last offensive, the Ludendorff offensive, I believe it was called, from Germany towards Paris failed, and then the weight of America was felt, and it was rolled back. So Ukraine and Russia are sort of that way. Who's up? Who's down? Taiwan resident. Now, Taiwan is not one island. It's many islands. And the Matsu Islands are being deserted by a bunch of people because China cut the cables to the island. Typical, very subtle move by the People's Republic of China and Xi Jinping. We'll continue to follow that story. Very fascinating story in the LA Times today. On bad bets, dysfunction inside the collapse of Skid Row housing trust, and not for profits. All, if they'd given all the money to the Salvation Army, those people, half those people in L.A. have been suffering through the longest, wettest winter of my many years in California. The 70,000 homeless people, if they'd just given the money to the Salvation Army, it'd be fixed now. But they set up an agency, and of course, the agency blew the money because they reinvented the wheel. I found amusing the Wall Street Journal story. Marijuana has special risks for older people. Cannabis that seniors take for pain, sleep, or anxiety can lead to other problems. Here's what to watch for. They're worried about the boomers being stoned, and they should be worrying about the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders being stoned in places like Colorado using gummies and non-evident things. But that's what the Wall Street Journal decided to write about today. Also, Americans pull back from the values that once defined the United States. Patriotism, religious faith, having children and other priorities that help define the national character for generations are receding in importance to Americans. Some 38% of respondents said patriotism was very important to them. 39% said religion was very important. That was down sharply from 1998, when patriotism was important to 7 out of 10 Americans, as opposed to 38 out of 100. And 1998, 62% said religion was very important to them. That's down to 39%. My skepticism about surveys like this is, it depends on the mood you count people in. Who are you talking to? Where did you go? I was at church on Saturday and Sunday. I was with Patriots, Toby and Bob, fetching us. You and I were all over Southern California yesterday. And I don't see that. They are probably talking about millennials and the impact of social media, but Josh Krasauer wrote a piece on it. We'll be talking to him about it as well. Donald Trump in Waco. Did you actually hear any of it? We're going to play that for you. I also want to say congratulations to Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, Miami, and UConn. The Final Four are set. Go Aztecs. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Time for the Yinzer Report. Selena Zito joins me. All things Selena can be found at Zito Selena on Twitter, at Zito Selena on Twitter, or just go to selenazito.com for all her columns. Good Monday to you, Selena.
Good morning, you. How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm a little bit, you know, weekends are always fun. Mondays are always a little bit foggy. But I want to ask you about Donald Trump's speech in Waco. I'm playing large chunks of it. I can't play the whole thing. It went for 90 minutes. But do you think it was accurately portrayed in the media?
Well, I didn't watch the whole speech, so I don't know how well they accurately portrayed it. However, because it's 90 minutes long,
Yes.
However, well, what part do you think was, where do you think the disconnect is?
The disconnect is in emphasis. I've been listening the first 10 minutes or so, and he's beginning. It's sort of a standard litany of the grievances the former president has. Elections are stolen. Supreme Court won't hear my case. My lawyers have to testify. It's all familiar, but there is no menace about it. And I thought it was reported as though he was menacing the country. But that's an error. And so I want to hear, does he threaten anyone? What's he saying? I just don't think they understand yet that they can't do that without upsetting and bringing him even more, they being elite media, even more attention to and support for his base. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, you're not wrong about that. I think it has been fascinating to watch my profession cover Trump as opposed and sort of the Trump DeSantis dynamic, and it is almost there is this sort of inference, and they're reporting, and I'm not quite sure if they're doing it on purpose or not, that they really want him to win because
the nomination.
The nomination, because they miss all the clicks and the attention and the drama of having him run for office. For them, Biden's been kind of boring. It's sort of like when they covered Al Gore in 2000. They had covered him for 8 years. They thought he was kind of boring. And GW was more interesting. So W got more attention. He didn't get the negative attention that Trump gets, but the negative attention that Trump gets is the kind of thing that gets people all riled up and for him. I will say this. I do think that they are overblowing the fact that they believe, meaning other reporters, not all, but a lot of other reporters have been writing, they believe that DeSantis hasn't been, you know, attacking enough and he's falling away. And that's another inference that I think is wrong, having spent a lot of time out there with voters last week and finding that voters aren't expecting DeSantis to fight right now. They understand, you know, voters aren't stupid, despite what a lot of reporters think. They understand he's still, he hasn't declared, and that he still expects to do a job as governor until he declares, until this session is over. And they aren't going to not vote for him just because in this moment, he's not fighting with Trump.
Yeah, I don't believe anything is close to being resolved on either side about what's going to happen, because stuff always happens, right? We have to, if we have a war with Taiwan between now and then, that's going to change the dynamic. But the question on my mind, in Israel, they have giant demonstrations by the left and people opposed to the judicial reform that Netanyahu ran on. In France, they've got those demonstrations. Do you think those two guys, Netanyahu and Macron, remember Liz Truss blinking and losing? I have already said many, many times, I don't think they're going to blink, but I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think they're going to blink. I think, I mean, again, could be wrong, but just based on their past behavior, I don't think they're going to blink, because these are two people that learn and understand what happens when you do blink.
Yeah, and what happens is it all falls apart. Now, I want to go back to Trump based on that. He can't ignore the Manhattan DA or his people will be upset with him. Am I right about that?
Yeah, and I think also it's important to note, you know, when Brad Todd and I wrote the book, The Great Revolt, the whole heart of that book was this coalition and how sort of different it was and interesting and how it formed. But I do not believe that he has the full coalition this time. I believe that the people that are the strongest with him are the people that are the least ideological. And that's where I think this race gets interesting, right at that moment.
It's going to continue. We're going to follow it. I'm going to play more of the Trump speech. Selena Zito has a new column up about Chris Christie, which I've just tweeted out. If you follow me over at Hugh Hewitt on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt, you also find there at Zito, Selena. Thank you, Selena. Jake Sherman is next, America. Stay tuned. Josh Krosshauer, Senator Cornyn coming up. Lots ahead on the Monday morning edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, Glory America. Bones Roar High, Kennedy Hugh Hewitt live inside of Studio West, joined by Jake Sherman, editor-in-chief of Punch Bowl News. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
I'm well, Hugh. How are you?
I'm great. I saw this morning in the Punch Bowl News this little item, which I want everyone to understand. The lawmakers are going to leave town this Thursday and not come back until April 17th. That's the week I also go back to D.C. So I am curious, when you say the White House and Congress have wasted much of the Q1, doesn't it always happen up that divided Congresses waste basically the entire divided Congress? Nothing gets done.
Yeah, but Hugh, the only issue I would say at this point, the big issue this Congress, aside from China, which you rightly predicted would be probably the dominant issue, and it is, the big issue here is the debt limit. And we have gotten no closer to any sort of agreement on the debt limit. Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden met once, February 1st. They've not met again. House Republicans need to put out their budget, Biden says, before he meets with them again. So in that sense, yeah, they've wasted a lot of time.
Well, the president is trying to get the high ground. The speaker is trying to get the high ground. And that will play out. I'm not surprised by anything. I'm not surprised by gamesmanship on the budget. I did hear the former president call out name-check Jordan and Comer, James Jordan running the House Weaponization Committee, Comer running oversight. Have you listened to the full 90 minutes yet, Jake, of the Waco speech?
No, and I probably won't. I saw the highlights, or I don't know if you'd call them highlights or what you'd call them, but I am aware of what he did. I think it's – let me put it mildly to you, Hugh. As somebody who has spent his life in the Capitol and was there on January 6th, I find it disgusting that he was playing that footage of January 6th behind a political rally. And I feel no hesitation in saying that.
Now, you dialed in on the one. I'm playing the speech itself so that people can hear it. I know they being elite media and legacy media, have dialed in on the president. I didn't see the video. I haven't seen the video yet, so I don't know what was played. There is no upside in doing other than condemning the riot. I don't know whether or not he did other than condemn the riot. I do know he stood. You know, everyone is inferring things from gestures. What he actually said is just the same old about the Supreme Court not being loyal, although he said they don't have to be loyal, about prosecutors in Manhattan, about 7 years of prosecution. Do you think that the average Trump voter is at all moved by coverage of Trump as they see it in legacy media?
Yes, probably. And they think it's unfair. They think that, you know, legacy media doesn't understand them. And by the way, Hugh, it's not only legacy media. It's media writ large. And it's many people, the conservative media, they also don't like. So, but yes, I think that people are turned off by the coverage. People, listen, he has his base. And, you know, I asked this to Elise Stefanik last week in Orlando. In order for Trump to win, he has to expand his base, right? That's just the law of addition. If he doesn't expand his base, he probably won't win if he's the nominee. And what is he doing right now to expand his base? I don't think that talking extensively about January 6th and, you know, having a choir of January 6th prisoners singing is going to do much to expand his base.
Okay, I was hoping, again, I'm soliciting from Jake, what was the most notable things from the perspective of a Beltway reporter? And you just named the two, the standing for the song and the video. That got the most coverage. I don't think it changed political dynamic in America. I think we're frozen. We'll be frozen until debates begin with 7 or 8 Republicans on the stage. Let me turn to Israel. Now, I spent yesterday with 2 hardcore supporters of Israel asking them, as American Jews, how they felt about what Israel is doing. And they're worried. I am following whether or not Netanyahu blinks or not. Are you following it, Jake? Is it of interest to Americans generally?
Yes. Well, it's interesting to me as an American Jew and somebody with family in Israel and all those things. You know, I have a general rule about this stuff, Hugh, which is I think it's really easy for American Jews to have strongly held opinions about Israel, and it's not in my view, it's not entirely fair. We don't live their life. So it's difficult for us to have a fair view, in my estimation. Now, listen, this is a huge political crisis for Netanyahu, though. I mean, there's no question about it. And there's reporting out this morning that indicates he is blinking. I mean, the airport has shut down. The union, you know, the big union, 700,000 people or so, has said that they are striking. So this is a massive political crisis for Netanyahu, and one that it doesn't seem like he's been willing until this point to get himself out of.
Yeah, what's interesting is they've moved the judicial overhaul legislation out of committee. It's now on the Knesset plenum floor. So he's reached the point of maximum leverage for negotiation. So if he pauses at this point, I will not be surprised. If he pushes forward based on what happened to Liz Truss when she blinked, I won't be surprised. But I love what you said, Jake. I don't comment on the domestic politics of other countries very much because we have no idea. I mean, this is Israeli politics is one of the most intricate puzzles. And Michael Oren comes on once a week to talk a little bit about it. I just don't know that Americans fully understand the complexity. And crowd size does not drive this. It's a question internal to cook. For Netanyahu, it's how do I hang on to power, right?
Yeah, that's probably right. But, you know, listen, as somebody who is pro-democracy, I'd say, in the Western world, it is troublesome. It is a troubling dynamic with the substance of what he's trying to do. It's not something that in our country we would ever stand for. You know,
wait a minute, Jake. We had the Democrats run for 2 years on breaking the filibuster and packing the Supreme Court. Because the left approved of that after Dobbs, people applauded in the United States. This is the same thing. They have a left-wing judiciary, and where we have a conservative judiciary here. And lots of street demonstrations do not overturn that. He won the election like 6 months ago. What do you think about sort of denying the people their vote?
Yeah, I mean, there's some I guess there's truth to that as well. I hadn't thought about it from that dynamic. There's truth to that as well. So, I mean, but allowing a parliamentary body to overturn Supreme Court rulings, I think it's a difficult look.
That's an American lens. Do you know that the House of Lords, Great Britain, just in the last 10 years, dumped the House of Lords, which has been part of the British Constitution for 700 years. And they did so because they had the parliamentary majority to do so under the old government, and the new government hasn't chosen to disturb that. So the old Blairite Gordon Brown government dumped the House of Lords. The new government didn't bring it back. That's a constitutional revision. Parliamentary systems don't have constitutions. So if they had a constitution, I would be more alarmed. But what I really want to get to is when do size of demonstrations matter? I mean, we had the million women march after Trump won. That got a lot of coverage. It was a one-day deal. Now we've got demonstrations in France against Macron, who just won, and demonstrations in Israel against Netanyahu, who just won. When do demonstrators get to overturn the election? We didn't want them to overturn the election in January 6th in the United States.
Well, they're not looking to overturn the election here. They're just suggesting that they don't approve of this maneuver. And if they don't approve of it, they're saying we're going to strike. We're going to do that. We're going to the things that we do for our country. We're not going to do right now. I mean, that is quite democratic. They're not saying that Bibi should be out of office. Well, they might be saying that.
They are saying that.
Well,
they are
saying, but they're not saying that they're gonna. You know what I mean? I don't have a huge problem with demonstrating because you don't like the policy.
Oh, I don't have any problem with demonstrating. I have a problem with two rules. I want to cover massive demonstrations and elections with one rule, which is: did they win? Yes. Did they campaign on what they said they were running on? Yes. Does the media examine judicial reform in Israel the same way that they examine Democrats' proposals to blow up the Supreme Court in the United States? The answer is no. So the one rule, I mean, Macron won. He just won. And to me, the idea that they're burning down.
But Hugh, could I say something? Let me add one thing. The reason we don't cover the Supreme Court packing, and we did cover the filibuster, obviously, heavily because it had a chance. But the reason we don't cover the Supreme Court stuff is it's not going to happen. There's no chance of it happening. And we don't spend a lot of time on legislative items that have no chance of being enacted because it's a talking point. You know what I mean?
I don't believe that. I actually believe that if they broke the filibuster, it would pass. It would have passed under the Pelosi Congress if they had passed the filibuster. If Manchin and Sinema hadn't done, I believe that the filibuster would have been broken and a bill expanding the court or somehow changing the number of justices on the court would have advanced. But they didn't win the first because of Sinema and Manchin. Jake, I want to close by Trump. I had this discussion with my friend Bob yesterday. Does Trump have a 30% base over the entire country or 30% of the Republican Party?
I would assume the former, right? I would think that his base is 30% or higher. I think it's more than 30% of the Republican Party.
That's what I thought. But Bob had been citing, Bob's very well read, and I hadn't been keeping up on this. Congress is only there for 4 more days. Have fun with Patrick McHenry. Would you please ask him what the lobbying was like when SVB was going down? Because I think Jake's got Patrick McHenry for a conversation tomorrow morning, and it's really going to be the most important conversation of the week. He's really influential and matters a lot. I want to know what happened with SVB. Why President Biden went from no bailout to bailout in 48 hours. Jake Sherman will be talking to Patrick McHenry tomorrow inside the Beltway. He'll tell us about it next week. Stay tuned, America. Thank you, Jake. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Less than a half hour ago, Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel tweeted out, "I call on all the demonstrators in Jerusalem on the right and the left to behave responsibly and not to act violently. We are brothers, people." Josh Kroshauer is with Jewish Insider and Axios. Good morning, Josh. You've been covering Israel very closely. I'm watching not as a commentary on the law that is being debated, but on one of the wiliest politicians of my lifetime, Bibi Netanyahu, what he does. Now that he's poised to deliver what he campaigned on, massive protests from the left, do you think he'll blink?
Well, look, Hugh, it already seems, based on reporting out of Israel, that he is blinking. His coalition is blinking, not because they don't want to pass this judicial overhaul, but because there are some notable defections within the Likud party and within his coalition. So you have the defense minister over the weekend announcing or getting fired rather by Netanyahu after he criticized how fast this was going through. And there are a lot of other ministers and members of parliament that are expressing reservations this morning. So at the very least, it looks like this is going to be put on pause. The prime minister is going to be delivering an address that's been postponed or pushed back today. But it looks like the protests have forced and it's not just protests, by the way, Hugh. The airport, Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv, it's been shut down amid strikes amid the protests and people not working there. And it's affecting all sectors of Israeli life. 6% almost of the Israeli population has been estimated to be out in the streets protesting against this judicial overhaul. And that is forced the prime minister's hand and put him in a very weak political position.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. I have no idea. I've seen the reports. I've got the live feed from Jerusalem Post and the Times of Israel up. And Ben-Gvir has threatened to quit. And now they're having counter rallies. I don't know. But I am curious, Josh, if they think the same lens is being applied to Israeli demonstrations as are being applied to France demonstrations. Macron just won. Netanyahu just won. Their opponents are trying to reverse those victories at the polls by street demonstrations. Is that ever a good idea for winners to blink like that? It happened to Liz Truss when the new budget came out. She blinked and she was gone within 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, one of the connective themes throughout all these political upheavals throughout the world in the Western democracies is the fact that it is really hard to keep a coalition together when you are dealing with a lot of people that have different agendas and different ideologies. We're seeing that in this country with the MAGA right versus the more traditional Republicans in the Republican primary. You're seeing it in France with Macron having a hell of a time trying to push his agenda and raising the retirement age amid a lot of dissent, even within the center left in France. And in Israel, you have this Netanyahu coalition that has some of the more kind of populist right figures in Israel, Ben-Gvir, Smotrich at finance. These are people that Netanyahu did not associate with in the past. He won a sizable majority, and his coalition did in the last election.
And now he, you know, they're pushing him to the right in many ways. And that's what's led to this conflagration right now over this judicial reform proposal. The reality is Netanyahu has always had fairly centrist, center-right governing coalitions. This is the most far right he's had. And he's having a hard time leading because he's finding that the most vocal activist forces within his party, the most populist forces, are pushing him and to the right and making it hard for him to have any leadership over the country.
So I'm curious, Josh, do you think one lens is being used to cover? Look, the effort by the January 6th protesters, which dissolved into the January 6th riot, was about not accepting the result of an election. And the former president was not accepting the result of the election in Waco on Saturday. Is that covered the same way as the left wing in Israel not accepting the results of an election, or the French unions not accepting the Israel? Does everyone use one rule? I don't think they do, but what do you think?
There's hypocrisy. I mean, look, this is, I mean, all these things, we hear all the debates about process, Hugh. Ultimately, on all sides, it's not about the principles. It's about who's in charge, who's in power. And that's why these fights are there's no middle, but there's not as much of a middle anymore. In a lot of Western democracies, the polls are you know, going more to the bases of their respective parties. So, yeah, I mean, is there a double standard? Of course, in some of the coverage. But I think the bigger reality is, look at the reaction, what happened when Democrats in the Senate tried to lower the threshold for the filibuster from 60 to 50. That's kind of what's being discussed in terms of the judicial proposals in Israel. They want to reduce the threshold by which the Knesset, the legislative branch, can overturn some of these judicial proposals from you know, a supermajority to a majority. And look, I think if the Democrats, even though they had the power, even though they had the majority in this country, if they tried to do something like that, it would cause a major backlash. And even Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, you know, spoke out against that and scuttled that plan from President Biden. So I think there's a lesson. There's a lesson not to, even when you have the majority. Bush learned this in his reelection with Social Security reform. Obama learned this on foreign policy. When you go too far to the base, you're going to lose the middle and you're going to have a real political problem.
But I also think the other lesson is you can't trust the media coverage of like events to be like coverage because their political lens gets in the way. So the representation of what's going on in Israel and France is very different from the representation in the United States after the 2020 election. That's unfortunate because people lose credibility and the media suffers. Not Josh Kroshauer, though. We're talking about you behind your back here today, Josh. My friend Toby and Bob really enjoy your coverage. And I said, the man is working 24/7. Josh Kroshauer on Twitter. I'll be right back. Stay tuned. Hillsdale understands the importance of education to the future of our country, and they want you to as well. So they are offering you 10 free print copies of the recent issue of Imprimis, entitled Education is a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry Arndt. The special issue of Imprimis provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education. Explains why parents and teachers, not bureaucrats and activists, should guide what our children are learning. Don't miss the opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your free copies, 10 of them. Education is the Battleground, the Imprimis issue you cannot miss, by visiting HughForHillsdale.com. That's HughForHillsdale.com. Act now and join the battle over education for our country's future. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live in Studio West, joined by United States Senator John Cornyn from Texas. Good morning, Senator. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be with you.
I'd like to remind people you're the only member of the Senate who's been both judge and justice. You served as a Texas trial court judge and as a Texas Supreme Court justice member. So when I ask you this question, you're speaking about it from experience. What do you make of the Manhattan DA and the grand jury investigation of Donald Trump? Is it politicization of prosecution, or is it the sort of thing to which we are accustomed?
Well, you know, the power that a prosecutor has is enormous, and it's unilateral, and it requires the highest degree of professionalism and good judgment. And I don't see those attributes in the DA's prosecution in Manhattan. As a former judge, I am a little reluctant to weigh into something that, frankly, is a little opaque in terms of the facts, but any politicalization of the prosecutorial power is an abuse of power.
Now, you're also a Texas senator. Neither you nor Ted Cruz was with the president in Waco. Was that because you guys were both in D.C.? Do you just want to stay out of presidential politics? Why did you not go to the rally?
Well, I was proud to serve for 4 years when President Trump was president of the United States. I thought we accomplished a lot, but I'm not going to get involved in presidential primary politics. I don't see the point. I do think it's very important that we have a candidate who can win in 2024. And I'm not sure President Trump is that candidate, but I'll let that all get sorted out in the primary.
Well, that's what I do. I'm in Republican Switzerland until we have a nominee, meaning everyone is welcome here and we'll talk to everyone. But the president, I've been playing his speech since so many people did not hear the former president. His strategy seems to be to relitigate the two impeachments, to bring up prosecutorial, and to attack Ron DeSantis. Do you think that's a winning way, or do you have to look forward?
I think that's a mistake. No voter that I know of goes to the voting booth and casts a ballot based on what happened 4 or 5 years previously, or try to relitigate things that have since been resolved, even if you don't like the way they've been decided. So I think what people want is a hopeful vision for the country. We've seen where Joe Biden has taken us. We need a strong conservative agenda and leader, and we need a majority in the United States Senate. It will help a lot if we have a strong candidate at the top of the ticket with that kind of vision.
So, Senator, I also want to ask you, as a former member of the Texas Supreme Court, you saw the liberal left in America try and pack the court in the first 2 years. That's over now because the House is secure and Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema didn't change the filibuster. But the media covered that very differently than they're covering the Israeli judicial overhaul. I have no opinion on the merits of that because I'm not an Israeli. But have you noticed how differently the coverage is of the attempt to wreck the Supreme Court in the United States than the attempt to overhaul the Supreme Court in Israel?
Yeah, I've been watching like you have as a spectator. Since I'm not an Israeli, I don't think it's appropriate for me to weigh in. But I think a lot of this has to do with the left's dislike for Bibi Netanyahu, who obviously has a very conservative coalition that he's got to lead. Israeli politics is tough, and frankly, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for outsiders to be able to be giving gratuitous advice.
Well, I am very upset with President Biden weighing in on this, and I wonder if you have a reaction. If any Israeli politician called us up in the middle of the court packing debate and said, I think X, we wouldn't pay any attention to that. It's a domestic issue. It's about our constitution. It's about their constitution. They don't have one, about their basic law. Are you surprised that Team Biden is leaning on Israel this badly?
I am. I think it's a mistake. And, you know, President Biden's foreign policy efforts have been pretty embarrassing. I remember the fist bump with Mohammed bin Salman after he was so critical of the Saudis. Then the Saudis were chased into the embrace of the PRC, the People's Republic of China, who presumably negotiated a deal between Iran and their mortal enemy, the Saudis. So I think, unfortunately, President Biden's history of making bad decisions when it comes to foreign policy continues to this day.
It absolutely does. Now, Senator, I want to go back to that one lens. The media just distorts everything. We don't get an accurate representation of any debate. Do Texans understand that? We really don't hear what's really being said. It's all filtered. Do they know that?
I think they by and large do. I do think, you know, it's unfortunate that we have a media today that tends to engage in confirmation bias, whether you're on the right or the left, and not challenge people by providing just the facts and the truth, and letting people make up their own decisions, and having the kind of debate that you'd like to have on your radio show of people from all points of view so people can make those decisions for themselves. That's missing in today's media, and we need it back.
Senator Cornyn, very quickly, have Joe Biden called you yet about this budget impasse? You worked with him for a lot of years. Has the president called someone like you, a veteran of the Senate, to talk about the budget impasse?
No, the president's AWOL when it comes to negotiating this. That's irresponsible.
Oh, my gosh, it's so irresponsible. Senator John Cornyn, always good to catch up with you. Thank you so much, Senator. Hey, go over to the Grand Old Pod at the Universe if you want to hear the rest of the president's remarks from Waco. I'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, Generalissimo. I'm Hugh Hewitt. You're listening after the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.